Welcome to the Voice of Truth on 103.3 WAJR-FM, the radio broadcast ministry of Christian Apostolic Church in Clarksburg, West Virginia. And now, your host, author, teacher, and pastor, Doug Joseph.
We are so excited to have in the studio with us today, John F. Harrison, founder and president of Aspire Financial Advisors. He's not only an expert in finances, but he's an expert in giving Christian, biblically-based counsel about finances. He's extremely well-respected in this field. His articles have appeared on Time Magazine's website in partnership with CNN, Wealth Magazine's website, on the Boston Globe website, which is boston.com. He's been interviewed on radio stations from coast to coast, including multiple interviews with Jim Blassingame, the small business advocate. What a tremendous resource this precious man is. And we've asked him to talk to us today as though you, a Christian husband and wife, were sitting down in his office and just tell us some things that can help the basic American family to do better with their finances. And I want to underscore that everything that you're about to hear and much, much more is already covered in his phenomenal book entitled Making Mammon Serve You, a biblical manual for money mastery. This book will help you get organized, get control of your finances, and get ahead. It's a manual that uncovers the financial wisdom hidden in plain sight in the pages of the Bible. You can get the book at places like Amazon.com, but you can also buy it directly from Aspire Financial Advisors at AspireFA.com. Again, that's AspireFA.com, the website of Aspire Financial Advisors. John, thank you so much for being here, and welcome to the broadcast.
Hello, and thank you very much for having me. It's great to be here.
We've just been kind of brainstorming on what we can talk about here. And what we want to do is just try to give some nuts and bolts financial advice to families, especially to families, young married couples, and head into this a little bit and talk with us a little bit about some of the financial advice here that you have for us.
All right, be happy to. I think that if people could get their minds wrapped around three broad financial principles, it would do just wonders in terms of getting people off on the right financial foot. And this would be applicable to young people, you know, couples who just got married and are starting out, or older people who maybe find they're a little bit behind the curve and want to get things straightened out. There are a lot of enormously complex details in the world of financial planning, but the principles are fairly simple, fairly straightforward, and amazingly enough, or maybe not so amazing, they're all very biblical. And if we can get our hands on those principles, I think it makes everything else that we have to decide sort of fall into line. So I'd like to walk through those principles if I can, and I'll start with the one that's easiest to understand and perhaps hardest to do, and that is spend less than you make. It rolls off the tongue very easily, but most people don't succeed in actually doing that. There's a Bible verse in Proverbs where we are encouraged to go to the ant and consider her ways, and the ant is described as gathering her harvest in summer. And normally when you hear that verse remarked upon, it's in the vein of industry and hard work. Go to the ant, you sluggard, you lazy person. But I want to focus on the fact that because the ant is gathering her harvest in summer, she's gathering more now than she's going to consume now. What she's gathering is something she's going to consume later. And that's how the anthill survives the winter when there's no food to be had. They've already gathered it and stored it. And our lives sort of play out the same way. We have a winter coming financially. It's called retirement for most of us. And it's time when our income from our working is going to decrease or stop, but we will still need to consume. We'll still need to have spendable money. So we need to gather that money now in the summer of our career, so to speak, so that we'll have it when winter comes. There are a lot of challenges to doing this, and the biggest one is whenever we find ourselves with extra money, we immediately tend to look for ways to spend it. We feel that, oh, I could get caught up on that, or I could buy this, or I could finally get myself that truck I wanted, or all these things, and we end up spending everything we make, and some people spend more than they make, and
I'm going to have to say ouch on this. I've been guilty of that before.
I think everybody has in this country. It's part of the culture. But at some point, we really have to discipline ourselves to spend substantially less than we bring in earnings with the intention of setting aside the excess because we will need to consume it later. And if we can do that, we'll be up to a very good start.
You said something really powerful right before we started recording that I wanted to mention. You said that it's possible for a person, after they retire, to actually live as a retired person longer than they worked as a working, gainfully employed. That's an amazing statistic.
It's the truth. It's something that most people aren't prepared for because we set our expectations for longevity based on what we've seen come before us. And our parents' generation didn't typically live that long. And in fact, just let's go back 40 years or so. If the average retiree who retired in, let's say, 1966, statistically, he had about 6 years to live. So he didn't have to worry very much about whether or not his nest egg would last long enough to get him through retirement. He didn't have that long to go. 40, 50 years later, it's a completely different world. And if you have a married couple, both 65, both in good health, when they're 65, there is a 40% chance that one of them will live to be 90.
My goodness.
And if you have that gene in your family for really long life, you could go longer than that. So it's very conceivable that you could have a 30 or a 35 or 40-year career and then a retirement that is as long or longer than that.
Wow.
And so when we say consider the ant and gather your harvest in summer, it's a big harvest you need to gather. And if you're in the habit of spending 99 cents out of every dollar you make or $1 out of every dollar that you make, you'll have nothing in those years when there's nothing coming in. And the biggest lesson I try to put into people's heads is make yourself save money. And the only way to do it is to pay yourself before your vendors. Think of yourself as a bill. And you come before the internet provider, and you come before the butcher shop, and you come all the people who are the insurance companies that you pay. If you don't put yourself at the front of the line, then you will end up trying to save whatever is left over. And too many months out of the year, there isn't anything left over. If you're an afterthought, there's never anything for you. But if you will make it sort of a principle in your mind, I worked for this money. I earned this money. Some portion of every dollar I make is mine to keep. And if you would religiously pay yourself first, I always tell people when I'm teaching in church, you honor the Lord with the first fruits, you're next in line, and then you figure out how to pay everybody else with what's left. If you can get in that habit, you'll really have something left when you turn 60, 65. And if you can't, you may be among those who don't. There's a very large percentage of the American public that essentially has no assets when they retire.
I read somewhere that if a young person would really cut deep on their first years of employment in a retirement savings, within a short time they could quit chipping into it, and it would grow so large because of the interest investment on it that they would be far ahead of someone that started later and invest much more heavily for a much longer time. But young people never do invest for their retirement in the early years, do they?
It seems so far away to them. And it seems like there are so many other things that are more important, like getting that first Corvette or that first, 4x4 pickup or whatever it is. Thinking of setting money aside for an event that's 35 or 40 years in the future. When you're 21 years old, 40 is forever. And so it's very difficult for people to think in those long terms. But those who can will really come out ahead. And that's why if you can make it sort of a personal principle, some percentage of every dollar I make is mine to keep, and I'm going to set it aside right off the bat, and that money is not spendable now. That's for when I don't have the income to support my lifestyle, and I have to be living off my nest egg. And people who start that early, a 25-year-old who saves $90 a month and earns 8% on the money, roughly speaking, has $1 million when he's 65. Now, for a 40-year-old to accumulate that same money, he's going to put away a lot more than $90 a month because he doesn't have the time.
Yeah, time is really your friend there because the interest causes a compounding that becomes exponential. There's a kind of a hockey stick curve there at the end, and an older person starting late doesn't have time for that exponential curve to be reached. So they've just got to really pour on the savings,
exactly,
trying to make up for lost time.
Exactly. It reminds me of another scripture that says, in patience possess ye your souls. One of the hardest things to do with your finances is to be patient, waiting for that upturn in that hockey stick shaped curve, because in the early years your savings efforts don't seem like they're doing much. Even if you're getting a healthy rate of return, if you invest $1,000 and it earns 10%, then you've got $1,100, and that's not all that exciting. But if you let that process keep going, down the road the rate of acceleration will really take off, and you'll be amazed at what it can do.
Wow.
So it actually brings up a related subject in terms of setting aside money. The easiest way to set aside money for yourself is to not have to pay so much of it out to other people.
Yeah.
And one of the ways to do that is to be very wary of debt. It's very tempting, especially when you're young, to borrow money for things that you want or need but can't pay cash for now. And vendors are always willing to lend you money for things because that makes more profit for them than if you were a cash buyer. And so you're tempted to finance the car and finance the truck and finance the furniture and finance just everything right down the line. The stores will say, you buy a washer and dryer, interest-free for 3 months. And the fine print is, if you haven't paid this off in 3 months, then the interest accrues from the date of purchase. And suddenly you're in debt. And the Bible principle there is that the rich rule over the poor, and the borrower is servant, is the Bible word, modern English, slave, to the lender. And there's really few things more depressing than working hard to earn a dollar that's not yours when you get it, because you already owe it to somebody else.
Wow.
And interest that you pay on borrowed money makes you pay more for everything that you've purchased that way. And it brings up the whole subject of compound interest. Albert Einstein was reportedly asked once, what was the most powerful force in the universe? He's the guy that gave us E equals MC squared and that groundbreaking little bit of information. And when asked what the most powerful force in the universe was, Einstein replied, compound interest. And I think he was right that it really is a powerful thing. And when you understand how powerful, it brings to light another expression that I've heard, which says that those who understand compound interest earn it, and those who don't understand compound interest pay it. And if you borrow money and finding yourself paying compound interest, you pay so much more for everything than if you just paid cash. And it's worsened when you've borrowed money to pay for something that depreciates. For instance, you go to a car lot and you buy a car, and the ad looks great. Zero money down, sign and drive, $179 a month, and you're going to be paying quite a bit more than the negotiated price for the car when you add up the total of all your payments. But the car itself will lose 20% of its value the day you drive it home, just in depreciation.
Instantaneously, 20% of its value.
Yes. And so there you are making payments on something that if you turn around and sold it the next day, you could not sell it for what you owe on it. And so as a general rule, if you can avoid borrowing things, and that means thinking differently than society, as a general rule, thinks about purchasing, you don't have to have the newest everything. In fact, I purchased a new car once in my life just for the feeling. I was in my 20s, and I told myself, I'm never going to do this again, and I haven't, because it's a much better deal to buy a car a year or two or three old.
That's my testimony as well. And that statistic you mentioned of it losing 20% of the value, that's if you buy a new car.
Yes.
That statistic does not hold true usually for used cars, right? If
Correct.
They're negotiated right.
Correct, because they've already taken their depreciation hit. And all cars depreciate a little bit every year, but the most drastic depreciation is in the early days, right when it's new.
Yeah. And a new car driving off the lot depreciates the moment you sign your name for it.
When you get that plate from the Registry of Motor Vehicles or the Department of Motor Vehicles, whatever it's called, and you register that car and put that plate on, boom, there was 20% of your money right there. So it's very feasible, rather than doing that and making car payments, buy an older car that you can pay cash for. The car that I normally drive most days will turn 20 years old this year, and it still runs like a top. And I get compliments on it when it's clean. And
so an old car doesn't necessarily have to be some embarrassing clunker. If you shopped wisely, And I know your car that's about to turn 20 is a very respectable looking, very wonderful, nicely kept BMW. And you know, driving down the road, you look like a person that just paid gobs of money for this car.
And that's the most neat thing about it, is you can have a car that will turn head and you know, people say, oh, nice car. They always say to my car, that's a BMW, isn't it? Not, that's a 20-year-old BMW, isn't it? And it's a satisfying car to drive, and it's a much more satisfying having no payment on it. And the cost to properly maintain an older car is always far less than the cost of making payments on a new one.
Wow.
And so it's a good way to say it.
How old was your BMW when you bought it?
It was 16 and a half when I bought it.
Wow.
And I had been driving a different BMW that had 288,000 miles on it.
Wow.
And I was parked outside of a bank, and someone took a turn too wide and sideswiped it and just totaled the car.
Oh.
And I came out and saw the damage and called the insurance company and the police in reverse order. And when the insurance company gave me the check, I used that check to buy the current car and got cash back.
So, my goodness, what a blessing.
It has worked out very well for me, and it's so nice. I mean, I've known people, husband and wife, both drive new cars. They have $1,000 a month in combined car payments, and it's just been that way because as soon as the car is paid off, it's 4 years old, it's out of warranty, they're afraid to make repair costs on it, so they turn right around and get another new car, and they'll always have that perpetual payment, whereas without the payment, that's $1,000 a month that could be going into their retirement program. That's $1,000 that could be going to charity.
Wow.
It's many things that besides payments to a vendor.
Such wise advice. There is such an unbelievable difference between a person who is financially able and has the foresight and the discipline to pay cash for their vehicle and maintain it versus maintaining that consistent monthly payment. And it's a little bit like dieting. You know, a person that is slowly gaining weight, just the tiniest of a tweak could change the trend for their entire life. If they would just eat a little less, exercise a little more, they could be a person who stays fit and trim for a longer life rather than morbidly obese and sick all the time for a shorter life. It wouldn't require such a dramatic change as they've fooled themselves into thinking. Just the tiniest of, they're just slightly out of balance. Just the tiniest of a change would help them. And it's that way with finances, just a little bit of tightening of the belt, just a little bit of living within your means, and it can have just magnified benefits, much more benefits than this little change cost you, you know, but people just don't see that yet.
Absolutely. One of the problems is we tend to look far ahead to the destination rather than realizing it's the direction that's the most important thing. If you're dieting and you need to lose 150 pounds, that's an enormous total to lose. And you can frighten yourself or intimidate yourself out of starting.
Wow.
Because you think, 150 pounds, how am I ever going to do that? But what you really need to do is the first pound.
Yeah.
And then when you've lost the first pound, you need to lose the next one. And that little tweak that you described is what might do that. The, you know, water instead of soda, or walking instead of driving, or little adjustments that you can make. You know, cut down on the sugar and the salt and you know, whatever lifestyle changes your doctor would recommend in that sense, small adjustments can have a profound change in your direction. And so you won't wake up the next morning and find you've lost 150 pounds, but at the end of a week, you may have found you've lost two. And if you just keep going in that direction, you will eventually get where you need to be.
A new direction. And, you know, one thing that just occurred to me when I listened to what you just said about the dramatic difference between a family's finances over their lifetime when they drive paid for cars instead of paying a monthly payment. A lot of families that have children, when they file with the IRS, they get an earned income credit. The government is, at least up until this point, the government has seen the wisdom of encouraging married couples to have children. And you and I discussed this earlier today. There are many people who are absolutely backwards in their value system. They think having children is a drain on the economy when it's exact opposite. Without children being born, then you don't have the population. Therefore, you don't have the need for the stores, the schools, the hospitals, all of the construction workers that build the roads and build those hospitals and build those schools, all of the many services. And as you mentioned, you don't have that bright younger generation creating new things and infusing all of that wonderful technology into the economy. But when you have an economy like Japan, where they're not having enough children being born to sustain their population, they're in an economic free fall. And really, the only thing propping them up is Filipino immigration. And the traditional full-blood Japanese are going to die off and be a thing of the past. And no one's going to maintain their traditions or their values or their culture or all of the wonderful things of their history. And it's because they're simply not having enough children. But at least up until this point, the IRS code and the U.S. government's position has been that if families will have children, we'll give you a reward. They're actually encouraging people, and I'm thankful for that, even though some might argue with the politics and the wisdom of that. At least we're not China, where they're beating people to death for having more than one child. That literally, I mean, they force the woman into an abortion if the dad tries to intervene. They literally beat this one man until he died. They've instilled such fear that one Chinese woman recently, so afraid of the government finding out that she was pregnant with another child, she gave birth over a toilet and literally flushed her newborn baby down the toilet. Miraculously and amazingly, neighbors heard the baby crying in the pipe and called the authorities. The authorities came and cut the pipe open, found the baby. The baby survived. And they put the baby, they found the mother and put the baby back in contact with the mother. But at least up until this point, the American government, the IRS, is giving a reward to families. And so many times when that check comes from the IRS, you know, they counted off their children and submitted their children's names and social security numbers, and the IRS gave them a reward for having these children during their school age years and so forth. So many times when that money comes in, that family, if they use part of it to pay off debt that they've accrued over the prior year, part of it sometimes they turn around and they buy a jet ski or a boat or a motorcycle when they're carrying a monthly note on their minivan. And if they would just think about this just a little differently, stop buying some luxury item that you can't afford, buy the vehicle that you're paying the monthly notes on, pay that vehicle off and drive it paid for, and then start taking that monthly payment you would have been paying and start putting that into your retirement. And so just that one little change could have such huge ramifications at the end of their life if they'll just look at it a little differently.
Absolutely.
But it comes back down to self-discipline.
It really does. And the diet mentality is the same with money, because if you look at all the progress you have to make financially, you won't start if you say, well, I've got X dollars in debt and the kids have got to go to college, and you know, college can be $50,000 a year at some of these private schools per kid. And you look at all these enormous numbers, you just want to crawl back under the sheets and pull them up over your head and stop. But just like the diet issue, if you take that first step toward financial solvency, toward financial improvement, pay down a little debt, save a little cushion, start doing the right things that over time will put you in a far different place than where you'll be if you keep doing what you're doing now. And that way you don't have to look too far down the road and concentrate on how far you have to go. The old Chinese saying, well, we're speaking of the Chinese, the journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step.
Single step.
Take that first step, and that's the most important thing. Probably the other principle that I think belongs in the big three of financial principles that we could discuss would be for people to count the cost of the retirement they're eventually going to have. There's a group called the Employee Benefit Research Institute, which every year surveys American workers, asks them a variety of different work-related questions and retirement-related questions. And one of the things they consistently learn is about 42% of Americans have no idea how much money they will need to retire on. And that's kind of an alarming statistic. You don't go into a grocery store with no idea of how much money you need to buy this week's food, or you don't go into a car dealership with no idea of what a car costs. But people are going toward their biggest purchase, and that's their retirement, with no idea of what it's going to cost. And the likelihood of you actually having saved enough money when you had no idea how much you needed to save is not really good. So I strongly encourage people, don't be among that 42%, but count the cost. And this too is a biblical principle. Jesus told a story, a parable. He said, you know, which person among you setting out to build a tower doesn't first sit down and count the cost to see if he has enough to finish the project? Because if he starts this and can't finish it, everybody who passes by will laugh and say, hey, that guy started to build and couldn't finish. And it's rather like that with your retirement. Rather than going into it with no idea of what it's going to cost, figure out first how much money you'll need and where that money's going to come from. And that will tell you whether or not you're prepared, or whether, like in Jesus' story, you've got to go out and come to terms with somebody because you're not prepared for this. And the steps in that, I would say this, is first thing you need to do is describe in your own head what your retirement will look like. Where will you live? Will you live in a house? Will that house be paid for? Or will it have a mortgage payment? What will you drive? Do you have cars that will be paid for? Or will you be making car payments? And what do you like to eat? And where do you like to eat? And figure out what your lifestyle costs in today's dollars. And then once you have a monthly budget that is your retirement budget, say, all right, where is the money going to come from to pay these expenses? Well, I'll probably get Social Security, and the Social Security Administration will tell you how much they'll send you each month. You can go online to ssa.gov and get an estimate of your future Social Security benefit. And the odds are very good that that monthly check will be substantially less than your total budget. You may have a pension from an employer. If you do, you're blessed. Fewer and fewer people have them these days. And if you have Social Security and a pension, it would be good to compare the combined total of those numbers to what your budget looks like. You may find there's a shortfall. If there's a shortfall, that difference will have to be made up from your own savings. And the general rule of thumb I like to give people is called the 4% rule. You can safely take 4% out of your nest egg each and every year and adjust that for inflation so that it goes up a bit each year, and never run out of money, regardless of how long you live. If you take no more than 4% of your nest egg, it should be invested to earn enough of a return that you can safely take that 4% forever and leave the principal intact and leave that to your children or to whatever charities you want to leave money to. If you have to take much more than 4%, you'll deplete your nest egg and run out of money perhaps well before you run out of life. It is definitely not good to be old and broke at the same time. So just to give you the numeric version of this, let's say that you do your math and decide that you need $40,000 a year from your own sources above and beyond what Social Security and your company pension are going to pay you. Well, for a $40,000 withdrawal from your own account, you need the account to be $1 million, because $40,000 is 4% of that million. If you had that, you could withdraw $40,000 this year and a bit more adjusted for inflation next year. And if you lived to be 120, you wouldn't be broke, because you'd never touch the principal and you could leave that to someone else. If you withdrew much more than that, you're now depleting principal, and it's a race between you and the clock and you and your nest egg as to which runs out first, your money or your life. And so,
and this is probably why so many people retire and then shortly after they go back to work again.
Exactly. I watched my own father run through the mathematical problem of this. He had a very difficult, labor-intensive job, and he just physically didn't feel like he could do it anymore. And so when he turned 62, he retired, and he was getting Social Security, he was getting an employer pension, and he was getting a small...
Well, we're all out of time for now, but you've been listening to the voice of John F. Harrison, founder and president of Aspire Financial Advisors. And please let me underscore that everything that you've just heard and much, much more is available in his awesome book entitled Making Mammon Serve You, a biblical manual for money mastery. This book will help you get organized, get control of your finances, and get ahead. It's a manual that uncovers the financial wisdom hidden in plain sight in the pages of the Bible. You can get the book at places like Amazon.com, but you can also buy it directly from Aspire Financial Advisors at AspireFA.com. Again, that's AspireFA.com, the website of Aspire Financial Advisors.
Thank you for listening. You can reach us online at cac.us.com. Catch the Voice of Truth broadcast each Sunday morning at 11:30 right here on Talk Radio 103.3 WAJR-FM.